Setting Up Shop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Setting Up Shop, your podcast for maker people, people who create, who want to take their hobby possibly slightly closer towards being a business, maybe full-time, maybe part-time. Welcome to you all, whether you're a maker or not, and you just like listening to us, it's good to have you back. My name's Dan, I'm your main host, I'm a wood turner from the UK, and with me as always are Heidi, a potter from America.
Hello.
And Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
So today we are going to talk a little bit about luck. And this has come about through a couple of different ways, partly because I used to be one of those people grinding myself down, looking at how successful other people appeared to be on social media or when they were championing themselves and all this kind of stuff. And I'd be like, oh, well, I'm just as good as they are. Why can't I? How come my stuff's not gone viral on this? And all of that kind of good stuff. And over time, you realize that it's not about luck and it's not necessarily about, oh, they paid to have a blue tick on their social media or whatever, any of that kind of stuff. It's about the effort that you put in, basically. And so a prime example of this is, and what we're talking about really is getting over fear, as so much of this stuff always seems to be. And I'll start with a prime example, I feel, from my own personal experience. Then we'll have a chat with the other guys as well about theirs. I've started doing wood turning demonstrations at clubs around the UK. So for those of you who aren't in the wood turning community, as with many hobbies, there are clubs of people all over the world who like to do that kind of thing. And they'll quite often have people come around and demonstrate different techniques and things or inspire them with different ways that they do stuff. And I started doing these a couple of years ago, and I would do maybe two a year. Okay. Now this is a paid thing. So you can get paid for your time. So it's a very good thing to start doing. It's in the evening, so you can do it after hours from a work event, but it adds to your revenue streams. And about 3 months ago, I just suddenly decided, do you know, this doesn't make sense that I'm only doing like two of these a year. So I looked up and there was an online list of clubs that are affiliated with the Association of Woodturners of Great Britain. And I just looked up all of the club details for those who were within a 2-hour drive of where I live. And I sent them all the same email. And I said, hi, you know, my name's Dan. This is what I've been doing. This is where I work. These are my qualifications, in effect. Introduced myself. Would you be interested in having me come and demonstrate at your club? I am available. I'm taking bookings for next year, you know. So not a begging letter. Just introduce yourself. Make them know who you are and all that kind of stuff. And shock horror, you know, I've suddenly got lucky. I've now got another 5 demonstrations next year and 3 more people waiting on committee responses.
I mean, that's really surprising. What a coincidence.
It's absolutely amazing how lucky I've gotten in that scenario.
So lucky.
Absolutely.
Some people just have all the luck.
No, well, it's, you know, it's the problem with being, you know, this talented and having a beard. And it's just, it just kind of just makes everything happen, you see.
It only happens because you showed them your tits.
Wait until I was taking a sip of drink.
Exactly.
Statement. Absolutely. No, I think you'll find it was because we've now got our own merch. That's what it was. And I was wearing it, and that was the attraction. Absolutely.
Made you more handsome.
Oh yeah, most definitely. It is a bit more form-fitted over the belly. Right. No, Raz, in the pre-show. So I should remind everyone that We do very much appreciate you guys listening to us and any feedback you give. But we also appreciate that a few of you have also taken the moment to subscribe to our Patreon account, which is quite a low monthly cost, but it's still a cost. So we appreciate that. Yes. And we do now also offer content to those of you who pay for the monthly subscription, which in the form of a continuation of conversation, a bit of an after show kind of thing. And the first one of those was released this week, actually, on Monday. And so that's available. So if those of you like our ramblings, like what, you know, hearing what we say and want to give back a little bit, it would be appreciated. In fact, I've actually calculated out, and I haven't got a problem telling the guys this, in order for us to break even with the costs of running this particular podcast, we only actually need another 5 Patreon subscribers. And then we can continue doing this as long as the costs maintain as they are. So for those of you who want us to keep rambling on in the long haul, if you think it's got profit to it, then please feel free to commit to it and tell your friends to as well. Small internal advert there, mucking up our chain of thought. So Rasmus, you were talking in the pre-show about your example or an example you had of how much more successful you were when you actioned something in your time.
Yeah, I've it's kind of this weird coincidence, like you mentioned, that when I actually I'm good about like posting reels and photos and using my stories and sort of saying what I've been working on and those kind of pretty basic things, really, but maybe also sending out newsletters, that like just after I do that, I suddenly seem to get a lot more orders randomly coming into the website. Yeah. And it's just, it's really strange. Like I do some kind of work in one area and then money shows up in another place.
Fantastic, isn't it? When you, if you actually actively tell people and remind them that you exist and you have things available for sale or courses to book or whatever the case may be, that you suddenly get a response to that.
Yeah, really weird.
It's almost like that's become a common marketing thing and that an awful lot of retail outlets and conglomerations have active newsletters as a primary focus for getting things done.
Yeah.
What's your experience with this, Heidi? How have you ended up being so lucky as possibly arguably the most successful out of the three of us, depending on which month it is and what market Rasmus has been to?
Right. Let's rewind a little bit to Baby Potter, Heidi. I was terrified to put my work out there, and I did have a little bit of that, but everybody else is better than me, and that's why they're so successful. They're just so much better. And I have to hand it to like Tony Rollo, who had this event up in New York. It's called the Slip and Slide Party. He invites a lot of creative people there, a lot of makers go to it. And he encouraged me to bring some pottery in the trunk of our vehicle so that, you know, I would have an opportunity to maybe sell some work or at least like show people what I can do and possibly get people to order custom mugs for me. And I was so nervous. I waited until it was almost over and he was nudging me like, all right, can you get the stuff out? Jimmy's here. And, you know, Pat, or I don't think Pat was there. There were like a bunch of bigger names in our maker community. And I was like, oh, are you sure? Because I feel kind of bad. Like I feel kind of bad, not just about my work, but that I'm exploiting a fun time to put myself out there. Like, this isn't about me. This is about community. This is about us having fun. I don't want to take people's money. Like, that feels icky. And he's like, when else are you going to learn? He's like, this is a safe group of people to share your work with. And I did that. And I sold out of everything that was in the little box that I had of pottery that I took up there, you know? Like, everybody took something and everybody found something that they loved too. It wasn't like, you know, charity case.
Yeah.
It was like people were legitimately happy to have something from me and legitimately encouraging that I should continue moving forward with my craft. And I just remember like coming home from that event and just feeling like, why couldn't I have done that on my own? Like, what was inhibiting me from deciding that I was worth something, that my work was worth something, that, you know, I wasn't any less than the other people that had the confidence to just pitch their brief.
Yeah.
And really, that was like the catalyst for me to just chase what didn't necessarily fit like the corporate playbook. It was more about building community and sharing what I loved. And as a result of sharing what I loved, people became interested in what I was doing and said, oh, I love pottery. Could you make me this? Could you make me that? Which then in turn made me try new things, made me a better potter, made me more confident when I spoke to people at markets, gave me more material to write about in my social media. It all that to say, when I started out, I had zero confidence in what I was doing. Zero belief in myself, zero belief in what I was making was like what people would even want. And I did see other people's success as being like, oh, they just had more opportunity. No, I had the opportunity. I was just afraid.
Yeah.
I was afraid to put myself out there.
Yeah. It's removal of the fear barrier. That's kind of, you know, and not that there's just this one big fear barrier, but there's so many of them that we don't identify until either it's too late or until someone else points it out to us and goes, hey, let's take that away.
Yeah, everybody needs a Tony.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, funnily enough, you saying that reminded me of my boss at work, who he wouldn't actively promote me as a woodturner because he doesn't want to lose me from what I'm doing. Not that he would deliberately avoid giving me work or pushing people towards me, but I think he's well aware of the fact that if I really put the effort in, I could just leave and do this full time. But he had a situation at work where he was like, hey, look, we need to do more courses. Why don't you teach? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, because I've never taught before and I'm not confident teaching. You'll be fine. But bearing in mind that, you know, he's done a bit of wood turning in the past, but not past a certain level. Like, he was a guy who used one tool the whole time for everything. And like, he made stuff that was okay, but he made it in a very specific sort of thing. And his whole purpose was do this to make X amount of extra money for my family. And that was his sole reason for wood turning. It was purely commercial. Right. There was no love for it, but it was very much, I have X period of time. I can do this, 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 and this. This sells great. Let's do that. So it was a business opportunity more than anything else. And so, yeah, he pushed, and I sort of said, all right, okay, well, I guess I think I could do like a one day on this and maybe that, and I can practice this and whatever. And he really had to like almost bully me into doing that. Well, I've now been teaching for the better part of coming up to 8 years, and I really enjoy it, you know, and I have learned so much from it. I have learned how to read people, how to understand the way that other people learn, but also the way that I need to move a tool in order to shape something, rather than going, oh, well, I just do it. You think about it a lot more, which has made me better. I've understood where things are going wrong, so therefore how I can improve. And then I have improved, and then I've gone, right, okay, the course is getting stale and boring for me as a teacher. So how do I now make it more interesting? Well, actually, if I adjust this, this, and this, I've now freed up an extra hour at the end of the day. Now we can fit another project in, or now we can start talking about some advanced techniques. Now we can start, you know, playing around with other things. The students don't necessarily know any different. They benefit from it, but they don't know any different. But I'm constantly kind of tweaking things and trying to improve stuff and all the rest of it. So that's pushed my confidence up, which then meant I was like, well, hell, if I can teach 4 people or 5 people for a day, I can stand in front of a group of other people for 2 hours and do a demonstration. Like, standing up and talking, right. Shock, horror, I'm quite comfortable doing that.
So, very surprising. You know,
so combining all those things together, like, you know, but he didn't then, I had to ask him if he'd be willing for me to do demonstrations at work. Mm. And he was initially reticent because he was like, well, how much are you going to want getting paid? I'm like, no, I want to do it for free. I just want the experience. Like, I need to know I can do it. Like, I need a platform in which to do it. But I had to have that confidence and that kind of removal of the fear barrier to say, hey, can I put myself in this awkward position because I know it will be an opportunity for growth? And then, even though I did that and I got to that point of doing these demos a couple of times, I was looking around going, well, why haven't you asked me to do a demonstration? Like, do you do them? You know, literally, there's a club down the road from where I work, and they didn't even know I did demonstrations, even though a lot of them come in and buy from me, because I hadn't told them.
Yeah.
I just assumed they would naturally, by osmosis, find out because I'd done one at work. But they didn't make the connection between you've done one at work means that you will happily do one at a club because it's a different place.
Mm.
And it's like, well, no, you've got to go out there and tell them. So certainly making your own luck. And I think, and this is as much a sort of lecture to myself as it is to everyone else here. If you find yourself sat looking at your phone going, well, how come they, you know, do they deserve doing that? I'm just as good as, or if not, you feel that you're better than that person who's got a magazine article or won a scholarship or, you know, all of those things, which realistically are because they've sat down and have gone, right, how do I apply for the scholarship? What do they require me to do? How do I find someone to sponsor me for the scholarship who's of a good enough name that means I'm more likely to get the place? What magazines want you to write an article for them and you pay them to appear in that magazine, theoretically as an advert, but it appears as if it's an article about yourself? You know, like, there's a lot of that kind of stuff that is actually available to you. So I'm kind of using this far too much as a hobby horse platform to kind of just say, hey, look, you find yourself doing that, stop and check yourself and just think about that and go, right, what is it you would actually want? Do you want what they've got or they're doing? How do you get it? What are the steps you need to take?
I mean, it's very easy to just sit there and look at your phone and go like, oh, that fucker. Why do they have the chance? Why is someone just giving this to them, this opportunity, these tools, blah, 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 blah. And it's like you say, well, have you done any of the work to put yourself in a similar position or talk to someone and ask about the thing?
Yeah.
Because like, if you haven't, then what right do you actually have to be envious of anyone?
Yeah. I actually didn't know that's how like social media sponsorships worked, that it was more about you reaching out to the brands versus the brands suddenly discovering you and, you know, reaching out to you. Like there's specific networking events that you can attend to kind of be able to talk to those brands about yourself. Like, you know, we have in America, we have Workbench Con, we have all those different big organizational things. You guys have Maker Central, where you can be talking to those brands and those brands, brand representatives. I just always, in my head, for some reason, I assumed that that was like a they come to you situation. Where
that's the story they sell.
Well, true. And in some cases, that's true. Like Colin Furze gets, you know, because he's so famous and he has so many, you know, eyes on the screen. But when it comes to people like Pat Lapp, who, you know, worked similar to you, Dan, he was working in a shop selling equipment. And then, you know, started making videos. He was really funny. And then he knew these representatives and it was able to like, hey, you know, I do this. You know, is there some collaboration we could do here? I think Paul Jackman does the same thing when he started working with Brunt's and Carolina and all those companies. Like, I don't know why I had that in my head that that's the way the ecosystem worked.
Yeah.
That I was a small fish. They were a big fish. They would come, you know, make me part of them. But it's completely opposite, as well as like, if you want to know these people, this is the other thing. It's like, you have to put yourself in a place where they're at. Like there were these, I have so many examples of this, like and I don't want to rag on Ben at all because he's lovely and he's my husband, but we are two different, polarly different people. He is so much like, he's so much more fearful of people and crowds and putting himself out there and doubtful. And I used him as a catalyst to say, no, we're going to the Lincoln Electric thing in Cleveland. And we're going to meet Laura and we're going to meet Jimmy. And we're going to meet, you know, all these people that you watch, like every single video that they put out, we're going to go meet them and talk to them and understand what this space is like. And, you know, what kind of aura they have. Are they magical beings?
Yeah.
Or do they just understand the, like I said before, the ecosystem of who to talk to, what is authentic and, you know, what is exciting about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it was like that coupled with, you know, Tony's encouragement from myself personally. But I think a lot of the reason that I was even in that space to begin with was because I wanted to prove a point
to Ben
that that's what you have to do. It was less about me trying to prove a point to myself and more about me going, oh, you like these people? Do you want to meet them? Because they're people and, you know, you already talk to them online all the time. You're in that like special group that's talking to them and they're looking at your stuff and they're like, why aren't you doing whatever?
I love how much that your way into getting past your fear of whether people would like your pottery or not was because you had to prove a point to your husband that all these other people are also just people too. And yet when you got to that event, you didn't want to interrupt those special people's time with your little stuff that you made.
Yeah.
Because you didn't think it was worth a conversation.
Right. Isn't it funny? But it was like, it's so much easier to be the hype man than 100%. It is to know that, you know, if you're rejected and it's something that you made, it's so much harder. But if your husband is rejected and it's something that he made, like, you can just tell him to get over it. But I had so much confidence that, like, he was already getting, you know, hyped in these groups. Like Tony loved his work and Berkey loved his work and Jimmy was like constantly giving him feedback and they were messaging back and forth about like his techniques and what he was doing. And I was just like, well, you talk to them online.
Yeah, go and meet them. Yeah.
Can we just go and meet them? And I think it was probably like one of the best days of his life where he was just like, this is amazing. So then we went to Tony's and we had a great time and we went to Maker Faire and we met like Jess and all those folks. So it's, I'm not sure like how many people that listen know all those names, but basically they're like the people that made us want to do what we do and inspired our tenacity at it.
They're also the people that are the reason why the three of us have ever met or spoken to one another.
Oh, for sure.
So we're not going to do a history or creating the family tree of makerdom, if you like, but we're talking about people who have very large followings on YouTube, social media, all that kind of stuff. They put out a lot of content about creating things in a wide variety of different ways. That then inspired another podcast called Fools with Tools, which is a British-based podcast that some bizarre way why so many of us ended up listening to that. I think it was probably one of the earlier kind of maker podcasts that wasn't full of big names, so maybe felt more accessible or something like that.
Also, it was maybe one of the first ones from Europe.
Yeah. So because we were possibly still in Europe at that time.
Oh, yeah. You were.
But so over time, that then has, that's gained a following. And that's how, you know, then there have been events like Maker Central where people have gone there and they've gone, hey, we want to meet the guys who we talk to because they're accessible and whatever. And then you go, oh, you're so-and-so and you do this. And then, you know, and people on these shows will quite often will shout out different maker groups or individual makers. And they'll, you know, say, hey, you should follow this person. Or, oh, this person's really cool. They do this. And we really like this thing that they did and all that kind of stuff. So we're all just the same in that everyone's people,
yeah,
because that's good English. Everyone's people. It's just people. That some people feel like they're the rock stars that are unattainable because we put them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And the reality is when you go and meet them, like there's a maker that when I have a hug from that person, I will never have as good a hug as I have from that person. And I'm not going to tell who it is because I don't want to share that hug. I am literally like that is how much
I want that.
If you're listening to this podcast and you think it's you, then dwell in that joy and delight of thinking that it's you. I'm not going to tell you otherwise. Maybe you should listen to the after show chat and maybe I'll share it there. We'll have to wait and see.
That's a good tease.
That's a very good tease, isn't it? Sign up to Patreon. But there are all of those things where we encourage each other. And I think this is what it goes back to, as we say time and time again, build yourself a community around you. Most of us are going to be what I would class as a lone worker. You're sat in your own creative space. Yes, you may be, you know, have a partner or kids or whatever, but when you're in your space, you are not sharing that with someone else very often. And when you're in your creative zone, you're on your own. But that doesn't mean that you are on your own. I mean, I'm speaking to currently someone in America and someone in Norway. Mm. We are sharing our thoughts and feelings on this. We are physically, you know, in the separate countries, but we're able to see each other via the power of the internet.
We've also got to hug.
We have also got to hug. That was a prerequisite for like the whole podcast thing working. Yeah. Like, if you're not a good hugger, you're not in the team. So.
No.
So, you know, there's a whole realm of things there where you get to say, look, I'm having a day where I physically, you know, all of us can do this. You walk into your workspace and you'll sit down and you'll look around and go like, I don't feel like making anything today. And actually, it's been an effort to go into my workspace. The worst thing you can do at that moment is then sit there and scroll through social media and all of the cherry picked images of the highly successful people,
the beautiful studios that are
with the beautiful studios and everything else. The best thing you can do is message 3 to 5 friends and go, I've just gone and sat in my shop and it was an effort. What are you doing today? What are you making today? Like, throw that out there. Create a conversation. You're not looking for sympathy. You're just making a statement that everyone can resonate with and just create a conversation. Because quite often, if you say, what are you making today? And you get response from people, oh, well, I've got a batch of this and I'm doing this and I'm whatever. Or I've got this and I'm doing whatever. Sometimes I find someone will say something and you go, ooh, that reminded me, actually, there was an idea for this thing that I was going to make, or there was a different technique I wanted to check out to do this, 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 and this. And that can be sometimes enough to spur you on to like start doing something in that workspace, even if it's tidying up. You know, you'll just start kind of doing things. And then normally for me, what will happen, normally on a day off, I'll bully myself to get in the workshop about 10 in the morning. And around about 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, I'll suddenly be really inspired to want to work hard and make a load of stuff. So around about the time you're sort of supposed to be winding down and going inside and like getting ready for dinner or bed or whatever. So there can be quite a diffuse thing there. But having the people around you is how you help build your luck, because you interact with people, you have conversations like this and you go, oh yeah, I know what I should do is this, 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 and this. And then if you've got really good friends, they'll say, so why haven't you done it yet then? and they will give you a nudge, and they will bully you with love, and they will say to you, look, come on, like, you're here with me now, we're sat on the internet, you need to send an email, write the email, read it out to me, let's adjust it, share your screen, let's write it together. You know, like, what's stopping you? Do not underestimate the power of the community around you, because then when you're building your luck, it well, this is the other thing I was going to go on to, is I say building your luck, but apparently, yet again, the Norwegians have a saying.
Have it better.
Oh, yeah. We got this shit figured out already. There's actually an old Norwegian saying of everybody is their own luck's blacksmith. That's sort of how the saying would go in English. En hver er sin egen lykkesmed. And it basically means like you are in charge of making your own luck. Like we're saying, you're going out there, doing the things.
Forging your own luck in particular.
Yes. Yeah. Not forgeries, but forging, making.
No. Well, the reason why I angle it specifically towards forging is because forging is not just about, it's very specific. Like, you have to heat things, you have to hit them, you have to twist them and manipulate them and then join them together with an intense like thing. It's not just a, oh, I cut a shape out of a piece of paper and then I painted it a color. You know, it's
a bit more effort into it, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it requires a lot
more masculine
and process. It is more masculine, but I'm not going to lie. Every forging class I've ever seen has got at least two women on it, and they are always the ones who are much more drawn to the fire and much more likely to smash the crap out of the pieces of metal than the men
are. We have feminine rage.
Yeah. I'm not surprised you have pink tacks as well, and I mean, that'd be enough to send me into a feminine rage.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why I wanted to lean more towards that, Rasmus, the whole like, because if you, I mean, for you, forging is, that's your day-to-day, but for the others,
innate for you now,
actually sit down and work out, right, so I am taking a piece of raw metal, I've then got to heat it up towards a certain temperature, I then have to take another piece of metal on a stick, and then I've got another piece of metal which takes the first piece of metal out of the heated situation, I'm then going to lie that on another piece of metal, and then I'm going to smash it hard with a hammer. And I've got to understand what direction I'm smashing it hard with a hammer. And then as it cools down, I'm putting it back in the heat again. Like, it's not just a really straightforward process. And I know I'm over laboring this point now.
I mean, I guess I've fallen into the trap of getting so accustomed to all the complexities of forging that to me, it's more of, no, I just hit it and the shape appear and I'm more or less happy sometimes.
Yeah,
that's a video game.
I mean, that's forging in Skyrim. Like you go over to the anvil, you click a button, you get the menu, you choose the thing, here you go, bing, 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 and it's done.
Three hits.
Yeah.
Three hits, and you've got a full plate of armor.
Yeah. It's nice and easy. I don't see the problem.
Yeah.
But honestly, just today, I had a conversation with someone who stopped by the forge. And immediately by the questions they asked, like, oh, you have done like hardly any crafts at all. Like, because the whole concept about how these work is like, I had to go all the way back. So do you remember Play-Doh?
Yeah.
That's what I do with metal.
Yeah.
And that suddenly go like, oh, but how?
The thing is, I was just going to say, is you say you go back to the beginning and you say, do you remember Play-Doh? That's what I do with metal. But how do you get the metal to be in that state to do that thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's tie this back then to the whole reason we're bringing it up is forging your own luck and making your own success. Taking an example at the moment, one of the things that I desperately want to improve is being able to take my own product photography. Okay. And I possibly mentioned this in the past. I have a fantastic product photographer that I have access to. He's about 30-minute drive away from me. He's got very reasonable rates. The look that he does to my stuff, most of the photos on my website are his. Really happy with what he does. And I quite like chatting to the guy as well. It's good fun to go over there. But I have to save up products to go over to justify the time. So you do a whole batch rather than just one item. Yeah. If I could get a better understanding of how to dress the layout, how to, you know, what sort of look I'm trying to achieve, and just simple isn't easy. Okay. So, you know, being able to do all of that, if I could understand all of that, I would really appreciate being able to do that and being able to sit there in my own workshop and go, right, there's it, or whatever space it is, and go, right, here's a lighting kind of area. So it's consistent. Here's my camera. Here's my thing. Da, 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 da. I can take a load of shots. And I am confident that with minimal editing, they will come out not necessarily as good as the guy who's been doing it for 40 years, but good enough for me that I am happy to put them on my website. That is a thing that I want to achieve to get better at. Okay. So I'm going to now use this platform that we've created to reach out there. So if anyone is listening and they've done a lot of that and they're happy with that, and maybe they've taught it a bit in the past or they're willing to offer some advice, if you can reach out to me, tarrants.co.uk, that's on Instagram or on the website, that'd be fantastic. Or if you found some form of learning platform that you've used to get better at that you really like, please send that to me. But I am well aware that it's not as simple as, oh, well, I just need a new backdrop and one new light. Like, don't fall in the trap of just buying equipment. I need the person to explain to me where the position of the light should be, what type of light it should be. You know, is it yellow? Is it white? Is it, you know, is it going to be diffuse? Is it going to be all these different things? There's a whole, you know, there's a reason why photography is a whole subject in its own right.
Right.
But if I want to learn that, there's a lot more there. It's not going to be as simple as, well, I can just watch a 5-minute tutorial on YouTube. I can shove a lamp behind a curtain to diffuse some light at this angle, and then I'm going to get the shot that I want each time. Because I won't. I'll get the shot that they've set up for the YouTube video, but that's not necessarily the kind of look or the feel that I'm looking for. So yeah, the work to get me there is quite a few more steps. And I'm willing to do the work, but I just don't know what the steps are necessarily.
Mm-hmm. I very much also want to get better at product photography.
Yeah.
Because like, I do it. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes I know I should get back to this. And then 3-4 years later, I still haven't got back to take better pictures.
Yeah.
I need to as well sit down, learn more of this properly, and also try to figure out like, this is the setup I like at the moment, and just have that more or less ready.
Yeah.
So that, I finished a thing, need pictures, go to the corner, turn on the light, take the pictures, moving on.
Yeah.
Instead of every single time having to figure, like reinvent the wheel almost.
Yeah. And that's also like, Dan, you had mentioned before about like, oh, we're scrolling through Instagram and we're seeing these heavily curated images and everything. Well, that's not luck. That's also them learning that part of the craft to say like, I can photograph my work, or I can photograph a corner of my studio and make it look ridiculously gorgeous.
Yep.
But the rest of my studio looks like shit, you know, like, they're not showing every part of the story, and maybe that's behind a paywall for you, or maybe it's, you know, going to those spaces to see it. I think one of the things that really defined me as the potter that I am was that when I was in college, like I went to art school and I experienced what it was like to share a studio and, you know, what that was like, and, you know, how to clean my space and make sure that, you know, my wheel was ready for the next person, or my space was ready for the next person. And it was really about having a working studio versus like having something that was picturesque. Like we were in this, I forget what they called the space for the sculpture area. It was like the old forge or something like that. It was like, it was on the campus. It was an old municipal building or something, like for the equipment manager or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was nothing to look at. It was ugly as hell, but we made some beautiful work out of that, like really shoddy space. And I think that's the other thing that goes along with this whole conversation is like, sure, you can sit there and be like, oh, you're so lucky you have all these tools. Oh, you're so lucky you have this space. Oh, you're so lucky that you have this community around you. But in the same, like, I worked out of this tiny little room for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I produced a mega amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold a ridiculous amount of pottery. The dream was I would have a larger space. The dream was I would have my own shop. The dream was, you know, all these things. And it's easy to get caught up in, I don't like how the space feels because of the light. Okay, we'll change the light bulb. I don't like how cluttered it feels. Okay, we'll figure out, you know, there's a system called 5S. You know, like it's the 5 ways of working for you to be able to like move around a space when it's manufacturing space. So, you know, where do your tools go? What's the next step in the process? Is your workflow correct in your space? That all helps to negate those tendencies to feel envy.
Yep.
About what other people have, first of all, but also by other people's productivity. Like if you start thinking about that more universally, like, okay, I covet that tool. why do I feel that that tool is what's making that person magical? Is it really the tool? Is it really that they went out and they bought like racks and racks of Festools and they have gray and green boxes all through their shop?
Yeah.
Or is that just them like trying to be like, you know, I had the money.
Yeah.
Is that Craftsman tool just as good as that, you know, Festool for what you're doing at the stage that you're at in your career? And I remember, not to digress back to like those days back when we were first starting out, but like, I remember Ben being hesitant to buy what he would describe as like throwaway tools, cheap tools from like Harbor Freight. If he was going to invest in tools, he wanted to invest in really well-built tools that he could really feel like he would be able to utilize for years. And I was of the mindset, get cheap, learn how you're doing it, and then, you know, see if you're going to stick with it and then put the money into it and get something bigger, better, you know, stronger, faster, or whatever that song is. but like, do you ever look back at your time, you know, coming up in your field and go like, why was I so hung up on that like name brand thing or that, you know, that big space or that, you know, car? Or you know, was there any device or something that was like impeding upon you actually taking the steps in your crafting experience because you thought you had to have that one thing and then you could do it?
I mean, for me, definitely it was the lathe.
Well, I mean, you definitely needed a lathe.
Yeah, I know. But the one I've got now is the fourth one I've owned.
Wow.
Oh.
Okay. So I had a lathe at the very beginning. I picked one up as an exchange for something else from a guy I was working with. I had no interest in wood turning at all, but it was a machine I didn't have for my machine collection kind of idea. The motor didn't work. And my initial thought was, oh, I'll just tinker with the motor kind of thing. Very quickly learned that I have no interest in that kind of motor and I'm not that way inclined. You know, if I was, I would have been a mechanic. Opportunity came up at work where I changed job, where we you know, it was predominantly to do with wood turning, and someone wanted a different lathe or wanted a different motor for a lathe. And like the boss was like, oh, well, we haven't got anyone who can swap them over. And I was like, well, actually, I've taken that exact motor off my lathe like 10 times. I know how to take it on and off without it being a problem. He said, well, that's fine. But what am I going to do with this other motor that's just going to be spare? I'm like, well, I need one that works.
It's a me, Mario.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, what sort of price are we talking? And I think from memory, I got like a brand new motor for the lathe for like 30 quid.
Nice.
As long as I swap the motor on this other one for the guy. So I was out there in the car park, just like stripping this motor down off one, flipping it over and all this kind of stuff. Got it all on. It worked. The guy went away happy. I went away happy, fitting my motor. And yeah, great. But then very quickly, I was like, it doesn't have variable speed on it. It's got fixed speeds. Like, you know, you're never happy. It's not got all the bells and whistles on it. Yeah. It's like it's on or off and it will run at the speed that belt's on. And if you want to change the speed, you've got to stop it. You've got to pull the motor forward. You've got to move the belt. You've got to do all these things. So I was chasing like that kind of, but if I just get this, then my turning will get better, rather than focusing on actually doing it. So I saved up and bought a motor that did have variable speed and I did that and la, 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 la. And then the other, you know, and just, each time there was like, I was buying one, it was improving it. It was getting it better until I got to the lathe that I've got now, which I'm very happy with, but it's not big enough. Like it will do 90% of the work that I do. It's absolutely fine. It's great for teaching people on all of that kind of stuff. But I am getting asked, I got asked this week, hey, you know, someone reached out to my day job and they said, oh, do you know anyone who wood turns? They've put my name forward, which again, oh, that's lucky. How did that happen? Well, because I started telling people I will do small wood turning jobs and the other staff heard about it. So now when anyone on site gets a phone call, do you know a wood turner? They give them my name, not someone else's. Amazing how lucky that made me. But they reached out for a job and they said, oh, we need someone to make these five table legs. And I looked at it, super simple design, really easy for me to do. Cool, what size do they need to be? Oh, they need to be 900 millimeters long. Great, the maximum capacity of my lathe is 850.
Ooh.
Sorry, I can't do the job. Mm. So now I'm at a stage. Sorry?
Couldn't you just make them in two parts?
No, they wanted them a single piece. They're going outside and whatever. But I'm now at that stage where it's like, okay, cool. So realistically, if I want to make sure that I can't turn down an extra percentage of jobs, I need a greater capacity on the lathe. But I'm not chasing that at the moment. That's not really a problem, but I'm aware of it. Whereas in the past, it was like, oh, no, I need that, I need that, I need that. Once I reached that point of, oh, it's got variable speed and whatever, realistically, what it was is I wanted a new lathe with all the bells and whistles on it, because then I felt like I'd made it, and I was like, I had achieved, you know, it's not a hobby now. Now this is a commitment. Now this is justifiable. This is like, I'm actually doing this. But the interesting thing for me was, is that on the journey, I learned how to buy and sell secondhand machinery, which is now another string to my bow for something else. But I was just going to swing this back to, it's really interesting you say about, like, look at the person, they've got all the tools, or look at the person, they've got all the nice photos and all that kind of stuff. I'm not in one of these episodes, but Rasmus and I have had a conversation in the past where I've genuinely said to him, I said, look, you know, you're like half my age.
You
pretty much.
You're like 15.
You pretty much. Thank you, Heidi. You pretty much from the womb been like playing with plasticine and then hitting things with a hammer. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know you're a successful business person at this kind of thing. You understood what you wanted to do. I'm now a bit older. I have a personal, not a bugbear. It's a personal frustration with myself that I didn't know what I wanted to do until I was a bit older. That's for me to deal with, nothing else. But I was trying to say to him, right, how do I get to the point where you are full-time doing what you are doing, what you love, what you're passionate about, and I want to be there. So what steps do I need to get from here to get there? Like, oh, you've been doing it like, I think it was 8 or 9 years, I think we said, wasn't it, Raz, or something like that?
I've been self-employed for 12 years now.
Yeah, so you've been self-employed for 12 years. Yeah. The difference being is if I went self-employed today, when Rasmus went self-employed 12 years ago, did you even own an anvil at the time?
I was 9 years old.
Yeah. I fucked a lot of years. I was 21, thank you.
Okay, but yeah. But did you own an anvil at the time?
No. I actually managed to borrow 2 anvils from a neighboring farm.
So going to be like going full time as a blacksmith, and he didn't even own an anvil at the time, right? Mm. But the point you made to me, Raz, was the fact that if I now at my age went full time into wood turning, I already have all of the kit that I should need.
Yes.
To do all of the jobs that people will ask of me. So I'm skipping ahead like 6 or 7, maybe even 8 years of Rasmus's like progress, because like he would take certain jobs, but then he couldn't take others because he didn't have the right kit, or he'd have to make the kit and it would take longer, or it'd be more, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Although there's still an element of me doing that, the lathe I've got's not quite big enough to do bigger jobs. Well, that's not really a difficult fix. It's a case of, right, so what lathe would I need? Do I have space? How do I save the money? Save the money, buy the lathe. Like, that's quite a straightforward process. But knowing what you need to buy and knowing what it is you make, that's a whole other thing. So from the point of view of like working out how to become lucky or building your luck, is the whole thing of, look, what have you already got? What are you already doing that is quite successful? What is your repeat work or your repeat questions? Or like, Heidi, you know, what's your top 3 most popular being asked for mugs? And then looking at them going, oh, okay, well, they're the most popular because of what reason? Probably they're all PGH, something similar. So you've already done and know, well, can I explore my creativity by, you know, making the rolling pins that you're making, which then mean you put your own design on them, which then mean you can make another few mugs that are in the same sort of branding. And all of a sudden you've got 5 top selling mugs instead of just 3, and all 5 are maintaining the same amount of sales, but you've just increased your sales by another 2 mugs. I can't do the percentage, but you know, you've gone from 3 mugs generating you, let's say, $1,000 a month, to now you've got 5 mugs making you $1,000 a month. You know, it's the pushing yourself and not getting distracted. It's the investment, but it's not getting distracted by those around you. It's look at others to see how they've made the stepping stones so that you can do the same. Don't look at the others and go,
the flipped side to that is like, I should be at a place where I feel confident in my craft that I can, like, I've been struggling with the idea of going to the Craftsman's Guild and applying to be a member of the Craftsman's Guild. And that's really fear driven. I think it's the same thing as starting out as, you know, a business owner or starting out as a craftsperson or whatever. Like, I'm still in that space where I am my own worst enemy when it comes to progressing to the next phase or the next level. There's like that, well, okay, if I do this, then it's going to require more time and more effort. And there's a chance that people aren't going to like me, or, you know, people are going to like tell me exactly what I think I am.
Yeah.
When I say that, I mean, like, I'm not as good as what other people have inflated me to feel that I'm as good as, you know, like, it's really what I think. Like, oh yeah, they're just validating all of the negative in my head. If I put myself out there to do this Craftsman's Guild, or if I decide to go hang out with other potters, like there are these events that keep happening and they keep popping up and I'm like, I should totally go. I should, like, those are my people. I would get along well with them when I do see them out and about and like we run into each other. Like it's a good old time. But like, what if it's just because it was 5 minutes with those people? And then when I go and I do an activity with them for that, like 4 hours or like an overnight, you know, firing of a wood kiln with a whole group of people, what if they really don't like me? Or, you know, what if, what if they, I'm a laughing stock? What if like in what they're seeing me do, they validate that I'm not as good as everybody else telling me that I'm as good at. So it's like, I'm still, as much as I want to like parade around and be like, look how successful I am. And I think this is probably true for most people in the creative sphere.
Yeah.
Is that we're so consistently trying to do things better, faster, more effectively. We have a vision in our heads that we're trying to achieve and we don't always achieve it. And it's like hardwired in creatives to maybe second guess that they're as good as what maybe their work says they are.
Yeah.
And that's a really, and just for everybody listening, like that is natural. It's not because you have a tism. It's not because, you know, you are this unique butterfly that like you just are your own worst enemy. It is across the board. Everyone that I've ever talked to, everyone at every success level that I've ever talked to, except for sociopaths and narcissists. Those are the people that think they're good.
Yeah.
Promote themselves as if they are the be all end all and their work is shit because they have spent so much time convincing everybody else how great they are, but haven't spent any of the elbow grease to become legitimate.
Yeah.
I have a massive pet peeve about people who are too busy telling me about what they have been doing and what they will be doing instead of just actually going out and doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's incredible that at every stage, it's still a point of pushback for me emotionally and mentally, where it's
it is that imposter syndrome, right? You think you deserve recognition for what you're doing, but you don't feel like you deserve it.
I think there's an element of that, but I think as well, certainly from the way that Heidi's describing it, which I can understand, is that for all of us, our craft is so deep with associating our worth and the way people accept us.
Yeah.
That to then see a whole group of people who we theoretically should be able to just walk up to and go, hi, this is my portfolio. This is what I do. You do the same. You want to hang out? It's like in some ways, it's worse than trying to approach someone for a date. Okay. I
mean, yeah, because you are making yourself super vulnerable.
Yeah, more vulnerable than you would be if you're walking up to someone in a bar to ask if they want a drink because you think they're pretty. You know, like because you are starting from a point of vulnerability more so than anything else. Because even if, like myself, you claim you have no artistic sensibilities, I make stuff and the stuff that I make that I enjoy making and I go, oh yeah, I think that looks nice. I think that works well. That says to other people a lot about my character, the way that I am and everything else. It's a vulnerable moment. You put a picture of that on the internet and people look at it. And for some of us, that would be worse than putting up a picture of ourselves naked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the level of vulnerability we're talking about. So to walk up to a bunch of people in that state who theoretically should be able to just go, oh yeah, welcome, you're one of us. But there's that small chance that one of them who you possibly deeply respect is going to turn and go, what are you doing here? You don't belong. That's the fear. That's all it takes
is that one person.
Yeah. And that's crushing. And that can be absolutely horrific. So
is a bit of that don't meet your heroes kind of thing.
That's the risk.
Because you run the risk of being let down because you have this fantasy about how it will go, about like you have this thing you hope you're proud of to some extent.
Yeah.
You want the recognition for how good it is. But you actually what you need is recognition for the effort you put into it, not for the item itself.
Yeah. So
I mean, this is me going maybe a bit too far into sort of the psychoanalytical bit of it, but like,
sorry, is that overthinking, Raz? I don't think any of us creatives do that. I think
very different. Nothing at all to do with overthinking. Because I have never had that issue, like at least since I was in the army, of realizing, well, how shit can a situation be? And then surviving that. And it's like, well, after that, everything feels kind of easy.
So you're saying join the army?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Just
join the army first and then become a craftsperson. Yeah. You can survive anything.
No, you don't necessarily need to join the army. You can just go into the woods and be miserable for a year. That will probably do this, have the same effect.
Done. I'll do
this,
it.
This statement is not endorsed by setting up shop as a whole. This is entirely the free thinking Norwegian with the.
Yeah, well, go I'm just to the fjord.
Yeah.
Go, and starve. Yeah. Yeah. Is what he's
go walk off into the wilderness for a year and be miserable.
This is what they did.
This will make you better.
You know, they're like, just leave them outside. They'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, they that's Spartans, isn't it? Where are we going with this?
I think my point was, if you've already like gone through hardship, you know you can survive it.
Right.
If you have already recognized that you can survive hardship, then you know nothing else that's coming up will kill you. Harm you to the same extent. And to me, that's something that helped me overcome a lot of those insecurities of approaching people, whether that's craft related or dating related. I've never had that issue since the army, because like, it is all just people.
Yeah. Mm. Which is that's why you felt completely comfortable dropping a bottle of apple juice in front of your queen.
Yes, but we don't talk about that.
Okay. Well, that's another story for the after show.
Yeah, I can tell the story in the after show, because I don't think I've got that on the podcast before. But yes, I did meet the Queen and I did make a fool of myself.
Anyway.
Within the same 12 months of interviewing the Prime Minister. So that's an interesting streak I got going.
Yeah, yeah. It's Norway. It's a very small place.
What's next?
I think the point we've made, hopefully, across to a lot of people, and there's a lot we've covered today, which is quite good for almost a throwaway topic, but is that don't look at other people as a reflection of yourselves and think, oh, how lucky are they to have done this or to achieve that? Like, the majority of that, you can do it as well. Like, it's a case of what I was going to say, Heidi, about the Craftsman's Guild type thing. I was very, very reluctant to join the Register of Professional Turners. Like, I was just like, I didn't understand the point of the thing, but also I was like, well, I'm not good enough. And the thing that changed my mind was mentorship from a person who was already there and is a couple of decades older, who I respect greatly. And he basically, in under 5 minutes, summed up why I should be doing things. And he pretty much said to me, oh, from brief conversations, Dan, you want to reach this point in your career, right? I said, yeah. He said, okay. So to get from where you are now to there, there are stepping stones. One of them is this, one of them is this, one of them is this, and you've got to fill in the gaps and the roots after that. That was the end of the conversation. And he just made it really clear to me, like, this isn't about whether you're good enough or not, because he just flat to my face said, you are good enough. As long as you're respectful, as long as you follow these small steps, it's unlikely you're going to be turned down. And if they turn you down, what they'll do is say, hey, this is where you came short. This is what we'd like you to do so that you can reapply, and we'll chat to you again in a couple of months. You know, it's not like this big for this particular organization. But what I was going to say was, it would be worth possibly just finding someone who you respect, who's already a member, who can give you that little bit of mentorship, just kind of, you know, a bit of a nudge, bit of a conversation, and say, so what actually is this like? What is the application like? How, you know, am I going to be suddenly surprised and they're going to want to do a full inspection of my workshop and it's got to meet some form of health and safety codes? Like, what are we dealing with here?
Yeah.
And get more data and just.
Yeah. And I think the only reason that I knew that it existed was that someone that I respect very much in our area, that's a potter, Christy Culp, had become a member of the guild like 2 or 3 years ago. And I talked to her about it and she was like, oh, you'd be a shoo-in. Please apply. We don't have a whole lot of younger people in it. Yeah. And, you know, you're at a really great stage in where you're at. And, you know, you just have to showcase maybe a few pieces and then they'll review them and they'll give you some feedback. And she's like, they're really friendly. It's really great to work with. But for some reason, I'm just still.
Yeah. So it'd be worth reaching out to her again.
Yeah.
And just saying, hey, look, can I talk to you about this again? Maybe if she's available to it and you know her well enough, you can book a coffee meetup type thing and just talk it through.
Yeah.
But also you could, you know, if she's one of those people who goes to the social elements of it as well, just sort of go, hey, look, would you mind introducing me to a few people? I'm not looking for a leg up. I'm nervous, you know, but I just want to make sure this is the right group for me. And, you know, you could even badge it as a case of, hey, look, my time resource is limited. So I want to make sure I'm spending it properly.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll probably lean towards the authentic. I'm scared to put my stuff out there.
But that's fine. And I think that would be really, really valuable to you if you're able to just have that conversation.
Yeah.
And
say, she's so lucky she got into the guild. She's so lucky.
Yeah.
She's incredible. Incredible potter. Makes some really amazing pieces.
Well, I would love to hear, and I'm sure all of our listeners would love to hear that you've made that approach. And
I'll let you know. Yeah, I'll let you know. I think applications open in the fall, so
fantastic.
We'll see. I've been putting it off, I think, since we started the podcast.
This actually reminds me that I was going to actually apply for some guild thing here in Norway, like 6 months ago. I forgot. And now I've got the website up, so I'll do it at last.
I wasn't scared.
I'm just too busy making so much money.
I probably had this feeling of like, oh, why should I do this? I haven't looked into it proper. I should probably look into it proper. And someone told me, oh, you probably should go into that. And I was like, yeah, maybe at some point. Mm-hmm. And then, excuses.
This is what I like about this podcast is that we just had a conversation about no one's superhuman, everyone's just human and all this kind of stuff. And I have no idea if people listening to it, this sort of like look up or venerate or respect any of us here, and whether you do or not, that's absolutely fine. But you can hear from what we're saying that all of us are like, I should be doing this thing. Here are the reasons why I haven't, but equally, here are the reasons why each of us will support one another and go, no, you should be doing that thing. Come on, you know, let's put the steps out there. So thank you everyone for listening. For those of you who want to hear who the best hugger that I've ever had is, we'll need to listen to the Patreon. And the only way to do that is to subscribe to the Patreon. We are very, very, very nearly at the point of launching our merch store. So for those of you who want to support us by getting something in return, like a t-shirt or a hoodie or a cap or anything like that, I am currently sporting one of the t-shirts, which is very soft and lovely.
I did actually get the notification
ASMR there.
Of mine being delivered very soon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's so Rasmus is... Are you still waiting for yours, Heidi?
For my t-shirt and my hat. But I got a hoodie.
Yeah.
That's a nice hoodie.
Yeah, so we were just waiting on samples, wanted to make sure things was good before.
Well, did you just become American?
Was good, yeah.
Was good, man.
And if you want to follow on a little bit more, please follow us on our social media. So we are at setting_up_shop, SHOPPE on all of the social media. And we've got the website, which to be fair, we should probably update and do some things with as well. If you don't feel like you can support us by subscribing to Patreon or buying a t-shirt or whatever when they come, that's absolutely fine as well. Two of the best things you can do for us. One is tell other people, get other people to listen to us. And the second one is leave us a rating, leave us a comment on wherever it is you listen to this podcast. Both of those things help us, and we really appreciate them, and we appreciate you. If you want to reach out and get in contact with me specifically, is Tarrants, TARRANTS.co.uk on social media. Rasmus, should you wish to speak to the child Rasmus Blacksmith, you can speak at Rasmus Loen, Loen. If you want to get hold of Heidi, it is Whitehall_pottery, WHITEHALL_pottery. It's been great to have this conversation, and we hope you enjoy this episode. We'll speak to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.